Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandro Rojas, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandro has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome. It is Alejandro Rojas with Open Minds Radio, and I am excited today. I'm always excited for the show, but we have a wonderful guest tonight. That is Peter Robbins. And one of the reasons I'm so excited is that the Roswell Festival is coming up this weekend. I will be speaking on Friday. That is Roswell, New Mexico, and they have a festival every year during the 4th of July weekend in order to, in the anniversary of the alleged crash of the UFO out there. So I'm excited. I'm going to be talking about Roswell's cultural impacts to our culture and actual international culture. So I'll be going over some of Roswell and media and stuff like that. And I've been working on the talk, and I'm excited to deliver it. I've got lots of cool clips of movies and stuff like that. But Peter is putting together that Roswell Festival all by himself. Actually, it's the whole city of Roswell and even some New Mexico Visitor Bureau funds that help out. So he's not doing it all by himself, but he could if he wanted to. He is that impressive of a little fella. He has done a lot of research also on the Rendlesham Forest case. In fact, he wrote a book with Larry Warren that was a bestseller called Left at Eastgate, and Rendlesham we've talked about. We had James Peniston on, and this was a UFO that had invaded the space of an American base. We were actually leasing out there in the UK, the Bentwaters Air Force Base. So an exciting case that Peter is a part of, and it's the 30th anniversary of that event this year. So hopefully we'll be doing something cool with some of those witnesses later this year. But if not, at least our next magazine, the fourth issue of Open Minds Magazine, which we are getting ready for, will mostly highlight the Rendlesham Forest incident. Extremely exciting. And I know the people who have read our first two issues are just jumping up and down with joy out of excitement. They're probably, they're grown men out there jumping up and down and giggling like little girls. I know it. Out there, which is great. Thank you for your excitement, and thank you for everyone who's given us a lot of great feedback on our magazine. I notice there's a guy in the chat who is a pretty cool dude, and he used to come into our chats before, the Prophet Jackal, he calls himself now, but Jackal does his own show. Thanks for coming back, Jackal. He's a cool guy. I wanted to say hello. We'll be saying hello to some other friends that will be calling in to talk to Peter as well later. So I'm really excited about Roswell. Come out. It starts on Thursday, this Thursday, and it goes through the weekend. They have an excellent fireworks display, and you heard from Paul Davids last week, who has a movie about Roswell that's going to be, he's going to be showing that, and he's going to be showing his new narrative movie as well that's going to be really exciting. So it's just going to be a good time, and you'll be able to see that reflected in our excitement when me and Peter talk later today. However, before we get to that, on our excellent website, openminds.tv, we do UFO news. So we're always highlighting on a practically daily basis the news items that are out there in conventional media all across the world. And every week we bring our news correspondent, Jason McClellan, to let us in on what's going on. Jason, what you got for us, buddy?
Greetings, Alejandro. Hello, Phoenix, and hello, world. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, June 28, 2010. A crop circle appeared in a field in Wiltshire, England, last week during the summer solstice. The summer solstice is traditionally a time of peace and love. So this crop circle is all the more interesting because it appeared in a field that is near a wooded area in the shape of a heart. People flocked to see the formation, but the farm's manager, who viewed the crop circle as vandalism, quickly posted a message on a crop circle enthusiast website encouraging people to stay away from his field. The farm's manager said he will be posting signs and regularly monitoring the field to make sure that people will stay away from his crops and make sure they don't get trampled, a common complaint from those who have fields on which crop circles appear. Another crop circle appeared in England last week in a field near Inkpen. Hundreds of crop circle enthusiasts from all over Europe flocked to see the design. Some claim the circle gave them healing powers, while others claim to have found a crystal in the middle of the crop circle. However, someone who lives near the field suspects this particular circle was made by humans because he claims he can see where someone put a peg in the middle and walked around with a board. That could certainly be the case, but it could also be his way of downplaying the mystery of the crop circle to get rid of the hundreds of people congregating near his home. Generally, scientists have avoided getting involved with crop circles for fear of being ridiculed, but those who have scientifically studied the mysterious formations are still puzzled by them. Scientific research has shown that the crops in some formations have been superheated, causing steam to blow holes in the stem nodes, which could indicate the use of microwave radiation in the creation process. Varying theories have been put forward, ranging from the testing and calibration of secret military weapons to weather phenomena like ball lightning and vortices of air and heat, and of course, UFOs. These are theories, though, and science remains puzzled by the phenomenon.
It's exciting to see that story about the science of crop circles, because those are always exciting. We have Nancy Talbot on, who is pretty much the authority when it comes to crop circle science, in my humble opinion, because she's got she follows it so closely. And, you know, it's hard to explain some of those things. And already, it's always exciting when it comes around to be summertime, because that's crop circle season in England. And today, that crop circle that hit the news was impressive. There's 200 separate circles inside of this giant crop circle design. They're really incredible.
I've never been inside one, but I've heard it's just remarkable to actually walk a crop circle.
Yeah,
and experience just how massive they are and intricate the designs are. It's really cool. And you're right. The one that appeared today, or whenever it appeared, was quite large. And the picture shows it next to some woods. And
yeah.
Just massive.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to go check out the crop circles.
Let's do it.
Go with it. Well, we've got a lot of buddies. Barbara Lamb goes out every year. I think Jaime Musana is our buddy. He goes out. So we got a lot of friends we can go with.
Well, we've got to make sure we don't go where this guy has his signs posted. He's pretty angry.
Yeah, we'll avoid that.
Well, in other news, a witness in Oklahoma reported seeing a burning, elongated object with white flashing lights heading over the horizon last Monday night. Because of its trajectory, and because the object appeared to be on fire, the witness was sure the flying object had crashed. 36 square miles were searched from the air and on land, but crews found no wreckage. And Pottawatomie County authorities have called off the search.
Because they said there was no crash. There was no radar of anything there, and there was no plane they knew of being in the area. But this guy definitely says he saw something. So that's why I thought it was a good UFO story, because what the heck was this thing?
Well, and it's also interesting that they would actually spend the manpower to go out and search if it was just based off of one person's call. I saw something go down. You know, that happens. They get calls like that all the time. They're all, well, we haven't heard anything about it. We didn't see anything on the radar.
Yeah.
That's nice. But the fact that they allocated the time and the manpower to go out and search this area, kind of fishy.
Must have been a respected person in the community, and he must have been adamant about what he saw.
That's fascinating. I hope we hear more about it.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool that this flaming object would go down and there's no trace of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And our sighting for the week comes from Saratoga County, New York, where a witness captured a silent, white, cigar-shaped UFO on video. The object was seen during the day and was flying at an estimated altitude of 500 feet. The witness claims that a small plane was following the object. But in the out-of-focus video, I didn't see a small plane, but that doesn't necessarily mean it wasn't there. The video is extremely poor quality, but still, it's interesting to watch the unidentifiable object move through the sky.
Yeah, And it's neat, too. You know, I always think it's exciting when conventional media takes these things serious, you know, and posts the video.
Yeah.
Like this one did. They weren't making fun of it or anything. I mean, they must have been moved by this video themselves, and they put it up. And it is an interesting video, but videos these days are so difficult because anything can be created on video, which, of course, we see that in our movies every day. But there was a story, of course, I didn't really post it because it was hoaxing, but this guy called UFO Hoaxer. And he doesn't like to actually make people think that his videos are real. He puts on there really big, this is not real. This is just my own CGI little project. And he does these at home for fun. And they look amazing. They look incredible. And a lot of people get fooled. And it's funny. They'll even say, oh, I don't care if you are saying that you created this. I think this is real. Which frustrates him because he doesn't want to be, you know, tricking people.
Right.
He just wants to highlight his CGI skills, which are incredible.
And even the videos, you know, that CGI aside, you have the most basic, crappy video.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people see what they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have an out-of-focus video where there's an object in the sky, it could be anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, there's so many videos that are captured spur of the moment that are remarkable things in the sky that have no explanation. But just judging by the video, if we weren't there, we can't really tell what it was.
Yeah, exactly.
So everybody, that's why people have a hard time with the people who have this evidence, because unless you're there, you don't really believe people because you can't tell.
Yep. People say, where's the video? Where's the photos? They're out there. It's just that's not enough anymore.
Right.
The bar is raised, and we need more than that.
Well, in every video, people want tripods. I don't always have a tripod with me.
And yeah.
I understand that problem. But
they don't have iPhone tripods yet.
iPhone tripods. That's coming soon.
Right.
That's it for the news. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm your Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed. Back to you, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you, Jason. I wanted to mention a couple of cool stories that we had on our website before we go to break here. A couple of stories where we kind of broke the story. We got there first. First, the European Union, one of their parliamentarians, has actually asked, and he put through a bill for them to, well, I don't know if they call them bills, but essentially a request for all of the countries related to the EU to release their UFO information and to make one unit that investigates UFOs. So really interesting. That'd be great if the European Union did that. Of course, Britain has released files and things like that. Also, a story that we released was Maurizio Baiada, who, of course, you guys know, has looked into Corso and did a lot of interviews with Corso back in Italy. And he released, found some video that showed Corso saying he had talked to Bobby Kennedy about UFOs. And he believes Bobby talked to his brother about UFOs. So those are some great stories we have up at openminds.tv. When we come back, we'll talk to Peter Robbins about Roswell, so stay tuned.
Open Minds Production is proud to present the 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress, coming to its new home at the Radisson Fort McDowell Resort and Casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is the premier annual event for UFO researchers, enthusiasts, and the general public with an interest in mysterious phenomena. Come listen to expert ufologists, government officials, and respected scientists presenting information relating to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, abductions, cover-ups, and more at the largest UFO conference in the country. The 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress takes place February 23rd through February 27th. Visit UFOCongress.com for more information, including sponsorship and vendor opportunities.
You're listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Hello and welcome back. This is Alejandro Rojas. And you know what I was thinking? I said a couple things about one of the guys that's in the chat, and he's a good guy, but I should mention a couple of the other regulars. Paranormal Guys, thanks for joining us, and also my good buddy STS Droog. And that guy's kind of crazy, so if you want to see some of the crazy stuff that he types in the chat, log in. And this is actually the blog chat, which Paranormal Guys has a radio show. So does Jackal, but STS doesn't. You're going to have to get one. And a guest of many radio shows, and he might have even been on Jackal's radio show, is our extraordinary guest today, and that is the one and only Pietro Rabino. That's the Italian version of your name, Peter.
It is indeed. How you doing tonight, Alejandro?
Good. How are you?
Okay. A little spaced out. I got to Roswell a couple of hours ago and hitting the floor running, as they say. We'll do this interview, try to catch up on some email, get some sleep, and another interview at 8 in the morning here.
Yep. You're always a busy fella.
Sure am now.
In high demand. So did you fly out there to Albuquerque and then drive to Roswell?
No. When I first started coming out here, that is just what I did. But now, thanks to the visionaries at American Airlines, you can now fly from major hubs to Dallas-Fort Worth and change to an American Eagle, I think, is a subsidiary, and it flies directly to Roswell. So it's not only easy, it's quick. And I was in Brooklyn this morning, and here I am in the Visitors and Convention Bureau today.
Oh, man, I feel like a total chump because I'm driving. I didn't know that, or I will now be spending 6 or 7 hours on the road. But that's okay. It's lovely desert country that I'll be driving through.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Well, it's good to have you on the show again, and I want to talk a lot about Roswell, and one of the first questions I want to ask you about is, to you, what makes this festival important?
Oh, that's a great question to start out with, Alejandro, and it is one that calls for a multiple answer.
Great.
The most obvious is because the event itself that it commemorates is worthy of a significant anniversary. For any of us, of course, that are seriously involved in this work, Roswell is certainly a very well-established and singularly important incident, in fact, uniquely important. But for many of us, it's almost a buzzword for the UFO mystery. However, the reasons this is important are several-fold. One thing that we've talked about, and it is a point of contention among some of our colleagues, and I certainly grasp both sides of the aisle on this, which is if the reality and implications of our subject are what we feel they are, which is paradigm shifting, shocking beyond belief, a subject that has kind of created a cultural schizophrenia in the world since the end of World War II, where some people walk around with an appreciation for this, and others, you know, kind of live in a dream world that people like us are all just deluding themselves or, you know, fakers or,
right,
as Phil Klass said, that we want to feel special.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me years ago that how come this subject hadn't just exploded into kind of a event. Let's face it, one of the things that we human beings are good at is try to find ways of avoiding things that make us anxious. And it seems so natural to me that if aliens and UFOs are real and the implications are what they are, then there really is no better way to deal with your anxieties except by, you know, having a little fun at the expense of the producer of the anxiety, whether or not you overtly take it seriously or you don't. The other aspect is, let's face it, the subjects of aliens and UFOs have so deeply ingrained themselves into the popular culture that we live in now, that you and I were born into, and not just in this country, but worldwide,
mm-hmm,
that there should be an event like this, and as we know, there are several. But to come down to one more reason, and I think it's as important in the human area as any we can think of, if this had never happened, the events of the summer of 1947 in the plains of Corona, not that far from where I'm sitting right now, And maybe, let's say there had never been such a thing as a UFO or an alien, and we are indeed alone in the universe and everything else is static and dead. What would be going on in this particular little southwest city of 53,000 people? Well, lots of things. People would be having families, businesses, following their dreams, all that stuff. But because of fate, circumstance, and history, they have a name that is world famous. For many people, for flighty, silly reasons. For others, for very important reasons. And like every other municipality in the United States right now, times are hard, their backs are to the wall, and this is one of a tiny handful of locations in the world that can lay claim to a legitimate UFO event of such proportion that it is worthy of developing a certain amount of tourist destination thinking toward it. So I'd like to think that the sweep of events that we're going to have here, and it's quite mind-blowing over the 4 days from the 1st to the 4th of July, a lot of people are going to come here just for fun. It's family-friendly. It's kid-friendly. But you and I know that there's going to be a percentage of them that are coming here for the remarkable symposium that we have running on the 2nd and 3rd, very Roswell-focused, great speakers lineup. Wonderful topics, and there'll be people drifting in because it is a free conference. So while people are helping this community out, making it, giving it, I would imagine, its best physical week of the year as far as the business folks here, they can have a good time with their families, and whether they know it or like it or not, there will be a certain amount of covert education going on.
Right.
And I think all of those are kind of self involved. I've had colleagues that have said to me, and I won't even name names, but they're major names, how can you even be involved with something where this subject, which we know you take so seriously, is in any way tied to the word festival? It's just too serious. And of course it's serious. My rule is, yeah, since 2003, when I worked at the McMinnville, Oregon UFO Festival, it was quite an eye-opener. It was an awful lot of fun, and they had this absolutely focused, really well-realized small conference. If it's not, if the humor, if the good-natured stuff, if the lighter-hearted stuff is not condescending or sarcastic or insulting, but instead a pure kind of innocent celebration of these subjects as they kind of intrude
right
into the real world and as they touch on our fantasies and the tremendous amount of entertainment which has
yep
been wrung out of them and continues.
We got to go to break. But I'm glad you brought up that question, because that was the exact question I was going to ask, is that festival-type atmosphere and how some of the serious researchers get frustrated around that. But hold your thought. We'll get back to that
yep
when we come back from break. We're talking Roswell with Peter Robbins, so stay tuned. I'm Alejandro Rojas, host of Open Minds Radio. If your company is searching for advertising opportunities, then Open Minds Radio can help. We have a variety of extremely affordable options and packages that include print advertising and Open Minds Magazine. Open Minds Radio airs every Monday night at 9 p.m. Live streaming video of the show is also broadcast to a global audience at openminds.tv. For advertising information, visit openminds.tv or email us at advertising@openminds.tv.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
All right, we are back, and you're listening to Open Minds Radio, and we have one of my favorite people out there, Peter Robbins, on the air with us. And before we went to break, you brought up a couple of things. One thing that's really funny is you asked the question, what if Roswell never happened? And that's exactly the opening line of my talk out there in Roswell. Because, you know, I was thinking, what a challenge to do a talk on Roswell and how it's affected culture. And I thought, well, what if Roswell didn't happen? And that was like a holy crud, you know, what if Roswell didn't happen? That's actually, it means a lot.
Yes, it does. And again, for many of us, you know, in our field, this was one of the first cases that we heard of. The name itself is absolutely known around the world, not in every single corner by every single person, but I flew in from Brooklyn this morning, and it's another one of those names that just resonates. In a way, you know, not to be dispassionate, but it is essentially a brand, if you were, that makes people think of a certain product. Mystery, unanswered questions, anxiety, all of the what-ifs that associate themselves with our not being alone in the universe. It also suggests to many of us cover-up, secrecy, repression of facts, false democracy, secret government, you know, every other kind of term that you can come up with that. And may I compliment you on what an amazing way to begin a lecture at a Roswell-centric conference.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You were done.
I think, again, it really is important for all the reasons I enumerated. And it also, as you know, if you go to a UFO conference, more often than not, you feel you're in a safe space where you could chat casually with somebody that you just met about this subject that normally you would not be the one to introduce in a neutral kind of social situation. And here, we are expecting thousands of people. I mean thousands. I'm sure, again, many of them are coming just out of curiosity or to have a good time or because it's nearby or so many of the attractions are free. But many of them are coming because they do take this subject seriously.
Right.
And it's not something they're necessarily comfortable talking about either because they're intellectually curious about it or they've had a sighting or they've had an experience. And they know the level of conditioning by our media and our government, something that you and I are quite studied in.
Right.
And why, you know, so many people are just reflexively conditioned not to take it seriously when maybe in their heart of hearts they feel quite otherwise.
Well, you mentioned something earlier, and, you know, like we talked about with people getting frustrated about the festival atmosphere and a lot of people coming to have fun. But, you know, that's not a bad thing. Like you said, there are people who are uncomfortable with this subject.
Yeah.
And one thing that used to strike me is I was taking college courses the last few years, trying to learn some more about psychology. And at the same time, what I used to be doing was a corporate trainer and a manager of a corporate training department and things like that. But the difference, when you go to college, you know, your professor is rah, 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 blah, blah, blah. You're supposed to learn what they're just kind of talking. And the corporate atmosphere, it's different. We're doing, like you had said earlier, we're trying to make this fun and make sure people are intrigued and teaching them, educating them without them even knowing. Because we all know in the corporate world, these people could just leave or not pay attention, and then you send them out there and they don't know their jobs. So you've got to try to trick them into getting educated. And that's an important aspect of what I think happens at Roswell.
Yeah. Also because we have so many options of things that we designed into this. For example, myself and Karen Dolan, who, of course, will also be one of our distinguished speakers, we will be dividing up several hours of time here in a wonderful location in the Visitors Bureau to do a series of workshops on UFOs for children.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that most folks in our field steer a wide berth around.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, of course, has kind of carved out in part a research specialty that she won't be addressing in her talk next week, but one that she is doing a brilliant job in, which is the impact of this subject on children. Everything from the innocent aspect of, you know, using Happy Aliens to sell your kids ice cream to a kid walking in while mom and dad are watching a really serious documentary on abductions, or if the kid has had their own sighting or experience or what have you.
Right.
I've done a few of these in the States and in the UK and approach it very, very carefully and don't fill kids' heads up with a lot of stuff. Essentially, it's an opportunity to ask them the questions and let them begin to get the momentum going. And you will speak to very few children, or actually very few people under 30, who have the kind of doubts that more serious, stodgy folks
who
are either older mentally or emotionally do have. In fact, most younger people, what is the problem? Why does, you know, why do people get weirded out about this? You know, the odds are, of course, that's just nonsense to feel otherwise.
And it's fun to talk to kids about this and ask the questions, like you said, because they come up with some really fun and interesting stuff. And really, but it is sometimes along the lines of, let's say, you know, Dr. Paul Davies or something. They're asking these kind of profound questions, you know, like, well, we're here. Shouldn't they be out there? And do they do this like we do? And other fun, creative type of things that kids come up with.
You know, Alejandro, the first one of these workshops I did had to be close to 20 years ago at a legendary private school in Suffolk, England, called Summerhill, that was pioneered by the great British educator A.S. Neill. And I had been basically told, this is a relaxed atmosphere, it will be kids and their house parents and teachers all together. And, you know, you don't have to be quite as protective as you might be in another situation. And what caught me totally off guard was I had completely forgotten on my way there, number one, that this is just across a stretch of water from the Sizewell nuclear generator, and nuclear facilities tend to have a higher incidence of confirmed UFO sightings around them, and less than 20 miles away from the site of the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident. And my little slide lecture kind of turned itself around after a while, and it became just one kid after another, and then the house parents and the teachers talking about their UFO sightings, in some cases from the school property.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very dramatic. At the other extreme, I did a workshop at a Fortean conference some years ago in Devon, England, and in this one I had kids as young as about 7 and up to 16, and I always ask that as many parents be there as possible for obvious reasons, and that it should be recorded, because somebody is going to
they're
coming at you, and what did you fill little junior's mind with?
Always safe.
Basically nothing. And after a fashion, we started to talk about stuff that people see in the sky, and then things that, you know, that you didn't understand, and is that strange that you see something you don't understand? We discussed terms, unidentified, flying object, etc. And toward the end, I said, well, does anybody, you know, want to talk about anything that they've seen? We had some kids who had been with their parents during a meteor shower, very interesting. Other ones who had seen a comet at night. And it went. A few who had seen maybe helicopters, but who knows, and one little girl. And for me, she really nailed it. She said, well, I sleep and I look out a window and I saw this thing. And it was like a dinner plate that you sort of turn so it looks kind of like an egg, but it's long and it was moving and it stopped and it moved here and it moved there. Her mom was in the room. And no guile, no angle. I think she was about 7 and, you know, a beautiful little British accent. And, yes, I saw something that I couldn't explain, and I never saw anything else like it. And I said, and what did you do? And she shot her mom a look, and she said, well, I went and I told my mother. And I realized we're getting into some territory here. And I said, what did your mother say to you? And once again, she looked at her mom and looked at me, and she said, my mother said she didn't believe me.
Hmm.
And the room went quiet.
Uh-oh. And mom
got a little
embarrassed.
Her mom just sort of looked like, you know, shrugged her shoulders, like, I didn't, you know, sorry.
How
and
funny.
And I, the last thing was I said to the little girl, and how do you feel about that? And once again, she looked at her mom.
You know what? I'm sorry. We're going to have to wait for the answer after break, but we got to get to break. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Open Minds Radio.
Are you or someone you know looking for the latest movies and publications containing information about UFOs and extraterrestrials? The Open Mind Store is stocked with books, DVDs, and other merchandise, including Open Mind Magazine, the leading bi-monthly magazine that explores the UFO phenomenon. Single issues, as well as yearly subscriptions of Open Mind Magazine, are available in the store for both domestic and international customers. The recently expanded DVD offerings include dozens of documentaries and conference presentations by experts in the field of ufology. The ever-expanding line of products, including DVDs, books, and branded Open Mind merchandise, make the Open Mind store an online destination worth visiting frequently. Browse the store today at store.openmind.tv to see the latest editions.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio, but everybody wants to know the end of the story. So
yeah,
the little girl...
I do tend to go on. I'm going to tell the end of the story and then be much more punchy with our little bit of remaining time. Well, the little girl looked at me, looked at her mother, and then said, my mother is entitled to her own opinion.
Oh, my God.
She was seven, and it was just a perfect note. But,
uh-huh.
Yes, I sure hope, because I know, you know, we're both in the Southwest right now, that some of your listeners that might not have solid plans for the long 4th of July weekend will consider joining us for a very unique 4th of July weekend.
Right. That's going to be a lot of fun. And I know somebody had contacted me wanting to call in, so now is your chance to call in if you're listening, Mr. Caller, and I'll keep it a surprise, so hopefully he'll call in. But I wanted to touch on real fast here, because I don't know when we'll be able to have you on the show next. Probably won't be too long, but this is the 30th anniversary of the Rendlesham Forest incident. Of course, your book, Left at Eastgate, is an important part of people knowing about that case.
Yes. December coming up will be the actual 30th anniversary of the United Kingdom's best known and best documented UFO incident. Even after all this time, information continues to come at us. We have more and more of the actual witnesses who are now willing not just to go on record, but to speak out in public forums. And it's certainly not going to stop with the 30th anniversary. But, for example, if you're on Facebook, you can join the Justice for the 81st, the unit that was involved to a great degree in going up against this unknown, and who many of them are still suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder of what they were put through before the fact and afterwards,
right,
including my illustrious co-author Larry Warren.
A really fun guy.
Yeah, he is, and he's also a true American hero who has been through the ringer, and without him, I don't know if this story ever would have broken. It is one,
right,
that I would say we're going to be hearing more about as we head into the anniversary, and I will keep you and your listeners updated as I learn any new breaking aspects.
Great. I know some stuff is brewing, and I can't wait to hear what, and hopefully something exciting happens. But one funny thing, when I did ask myself, what if there was no Roswell, I kind of thought of what is the next biggest case where you have these witnesses who were military people who were involved with the incident, and we might have to wait all the way up until when this case got broke, Rendlesham Forest. I mean, if there is no Roswell, we might have had this huge lull in the whole UFO arena until Rendlesham came up.
I think that may well have been the case. The only reason that it broke when it did was because Larry gave all the evidence he had, named names, cited locations, produced paperwork, and a year later, the one single-page document, which we would call the Halt document, somewhat redacted and compressed and sanitized report on the events written by the then deputy base commander of that installation in Suffolk, was still an authentic document describing a real event, again, even if a bit smoothed down. And Charles Halt, now that he's retired, is certainly a bit more forthcoming than he was back then. So, yes. Again, this one I don't think will ever go away, and unlike Roswell, literally all of the principals are still alive, and if our elected officials had any courage at all to readdress this subject for the first time since the 1960s, this is the one you could take to court. I am absolutely convinced of that, and will be glad to present it in any court that will have me.
Yeah, well, we've got some great articles coming up in our issue that we're going to be mostly centered around UFO landings, but in particular Rendlesham, and one that a young college kid writer who's written for us before, and he does a great job. He interviewed you and Larry and wrote a story on it, and it turned out to be a great story. He did a good job with it.
Yes, and Ryan, I actually got to meet him.
Oh, you did.
A few weeks ago, because I did two talks in New York City that weekend, and he came to one of them. And up until then, we had just been corresponding, and I agree with you, Alejandro. I think he is a fine upcoming writer, and I think he was quite even-handed on the story.
Right.
And we'll wish him the best.
Well, this story gets a little dicey, and I want to ask you this kind of tough question around it. Because of Larry's version of events versus others. And I was afraid, Ryan tackled that issue, and he did a great job with it in the story. But essentially there is, on the third day in question, where there was 3 days maybe of events happening, of where there was a possible landing and a reported meeting of military and extraterrestrials. Do you think that happened?
Well, what I think happened is based on 9 intensive years of study and another on top of that. The best, most accurate description I have been able to really make real for myself is that there was a standoff. There was a face-off between American personnel and these three presences that were out there in Capel Green that night. Now, if you ask a psychologist how much communication is actually verbal, I think the stats are something like, 25 or 30% or something. Most communication certainly is nonverbal. It can be done with body language, an eyebrow, there are so many ways. There are stories and legends and myths that we repaired their craft. We exchanged candy bars with them. We chatted away. I don't buy any of this stuff. But again, if communication can be as simple as, staring in the eyes of a fellow human being or another creature, be it your cat or bird or whatever, that's communication on a certain level for sure.
Yeah, well, Close Encounters, they did the little hand thing.
Yes.
And that was their communication.
And, just to touch on one other thing that you said, because it's terribly important. I did a radio show a week and a half ago with Larry and Jim Peniston and John Burroughs, three of the authentic witnesses. And one of the things that came up was different memories of the same thing. And Nick Pope was on, and Bill Burns as well. And we ended up talking a bit about the physiology of shock. Whatever we were doing to these guys, whatever these other intelligences were doing to affect their thinking or perceptions, there is also shock. And if you have 12 witnesses to a conventional standard terrestrial automobile accident, and you take each one aside and you interview them on what they remember, it is all informed by that moment where they heard that metal smash against metal, had an epinephrine
right.
and an adrenaline dump into their body, went into auditory exclusion, tunnel vision, selected perceptions. And I think one of the most important things, and Linda Howe made a wonderful point to this, she's been working also
okay, quick.
On, yeah, is cut these guys some slack. You know,
right.
it's 30 years and they're doing their best.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anybody heard of post-traumatic syndrome, you know? We got to go. Thank you for being on the show. And I should mention that our third issue, which is really going to shock people, that we've got an incredible cover. It's on abductions, which is another specialty of Peter Robbins. And we have a great story from you, pretty much our introductory story, telling people about abductions, how they happen, and a lot of incredible scenarios that are real, that people really went through in our third issue of the magazine. Thank you for being on the show, Peter. I will see you after my long drive in a couple days. But we've got to go.
Yep. Have a great night.
You too. Next week, we've got Robert Hastings. He's pretty much done the most research on UFOs and their connection to nuclear bases. He's interviewed tons of Air Force people, and we'll be talking to him about the details and a great press conference that he's putting together in Washington, D.C. So check us out next week. Thanks for listening to Open Minds Radio. See you soon.